Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. So happy that you're joining us for the Big Show. It's going to replay next week as well, so you get back-to-back weeks of the show. We will be at a conference, so we won't be here live. All the guys will be there. So I'm going to basically keep you away from Wayne and Ryan, who I know did a really good job the last time I was gone. But if I let them take the show two times during 1 month, I would never see them fit through a door in our office again. Their heads would be so big. So we'll be off next week, but we will be replaying the show and then back in the studio just before Thanksgiving. Got a great show today. Doug Hughes is going to be joining me in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about the markets, of course. We're going to be talking about demographics, predictable spending patterns, and how China has actually dropped its one baby policy and what they're trying to do over there to stimulate some growth. And Social Security is absolutely changing. Mentioned this last week. We're going to talk about it again today and who it really impacts and who should be doing something right now. And then we'll wrap up the show with questions of the week. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and older. We encourage you to go to Amazon and put in some comments, put in a review. We have four or five. We're about four and a half, five stars right now. The more the merrier. Now, if you're not going to put a good review in, the book is not called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's called Yesterday's Guide to Retirement Planning. Or just pick any other book out there and make the bad review. But we only want good reviews, not bad reviews. So be positive, not negative. And that creates a little momentum and hopefully, you know, gets more books in more people's hands. So when we talk about the market, you know, we're always talking about some up, some down. This comes from By the Numbers with our friend Mick Higley. And he wrote that 141 individual stocks in the S&P 500 so far this year, or actually during the first 10 months, have gained at least 10%. Including 50 stocks that were up nearly or at least 25% year to date, but over 262 stocks of the 500 were down in 2015 so far. That's why it's so hard to pick these things. You just have to have a widely diversified basket of stocks to come out ahead. Finally, from Bloomberg News, MyRA, the Obama administration's free guaranteed return starter retirement account, launched nationwide this week. The government-backed plan is an option for workers whose employers do not offer retirement plans. The MyRIA accounts can be opened to anyone earning a salary of less than $131,000 or $193,000 if you're married and filing a joint return. There's no minimum to open an account, no fee to open one. Payments can go into the plan automatically from checking your savings or through your payroll system via direct deposit. Any or all federal tax refunds can be direct deposited into the MyRA account. The MyRIA account won't return nearly what a stock fund is likely to return over time, but workers face no risk of losing their nest egg. The MyRIAs are invested in Treasury security guaranteed funds only, and effectively like a Roth IRA, the money that goes in is after tax, will be withdrawn tax-free. The MyRIA website says that interest earned will be the same as investments in the government securities fund. And if you're a federal employee right now in the TSP program, I think the G fund is paying around 2% maybe, so it's not a whole lot. And savers can put away $5,500 a year into it, kind of like an IRA. But if you're over $50, $6,500, you know, I think when you really take a good look at this thing, I don't know that it will be that widely utilized. The MyRA is a good tool, but certainly not the solution to this desperate need that we need in this country for additional ways to save for retirement. You know, I've been saying this on my in my speaking opportunities when I go speak to service clubs about the book Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. But you know, I'm not about the government getting too much into your business, but I'm telling you, until we have automatic enrollments and forced savings plans, and I'm not talking about this measly 3% auto enroll, I'm talking about 7, 8, 9, 10, 12%, you know, ease people into this thing and make it mandatory, people will not do it for themselves. It's just the way it goes. John Bogle from MarketWatch says you won't make much money from stocks. Of course, the Vanguard founder is John Bogle. He's a legendary founder of the mutual fund giant Vanguard. In a recent interview with Morningstar personal finance editor, he says the U.S. stocks over the next decade will earn just 4% on average annually. This is a big drop from his prediction a couple years ago when he thought that 7% over the next 10 years was more reasonable. And that was with an interview with MarketWatch. But here's the thing. He doesn't know. Cramer doesn't know. I don't know. Even Hot Rod doesn't know. Dougie doesn't know. Nobody knows where the market's going to be on an average basis over the next 10 years. And finally, I talked about this last time, but it's getting that time of year where mutual funds are going to be distributing capital gains to their shareholders. This only applies to those funds that you do not own inside of a retirement account. Many portfolios have actually declined in value this year. As I mentioned, 241 of the 500 stocks in the S&P are actually down. But we're going to be experiencing higher than normal fund liquidations after the year wraps up. Capital gain distributions are going to be high. For example, one major mutual fund family, their capital appreciation fund, is estimating that its distribution this year will be 13% of their net asset value. Another one I found, 15% of their net asset value. And then in another one, they're estimating 20 to 25% of the value of the fund will be distributed as a capital gain distribution. So in other words, if you have $100,000 in your account, they could distribute $20,000 to $25,000 of capital gains, of which you will pay taxes on, whether you made a dime in that fund or not. And you could have owned that fund just for a day right before the ex-dividend date, and you're going to get hit with that. So be proactive. You know, how will you feel if you get that big tax bill at the end of the year? You won't feel very good. So determine which funds are estimated to have high capital gain distributions. Select an alternative mutual fund or exchange-traded fund to substitute for the high distributing fund prior to its posting. And then you can always sell and replace the shares of these high funds with other like funds. I mean, there is no wash sale rules for me to go to one from one fund to another. So be aware of this. It's very, very important that you stay on top of it. We've been looking at this, Rod and I have, just to say, okay, are there any funds out there that we want to get out of prior to this distribution? Because there are funds that actually have built up losses. Funds don't distribute losses. They distribute gains only. So if a fund has built up losses, they can use those losses to offset the gains, but they cannot do that if they don't have any. So just keep your eye open for that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Doug Hughes. He's going to join us on just the economy in general. We'll get a little update on earnings, how companies are doing, update on Fed movements, and what's happening in the global environment. Is there anything we need to be keeping our eyes on as well? We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, the first Saturday, the first Thursday of every month, we typically do more of investments, and that's what we're going to be doing. We've let Hot Rod off the hook for the big show, and Doug Hughes has joined me live in the studio. And Doug, I know that the market has been just plugging and chugging along. We had GDP that came out pretty dismal at a 1.5% growth rate. I think 70% of companies so far reporting have beat earnings estimates, which is pretty good. It is on down revenues. So far, things are looking not bad.
Yeah, and you know, there was another number that came out this week that kind of caught some people by surprise, and that was new home sales were down 11.5% in September, and that was kind of a number that took people by surprise. But I think, you know, over the last few years, as people have been refinancing their own debt, these corporations are lowering their debt, their earnings are beginning to look a little bit better. But not to be lost in all of this in the last couple of weeks have been the layoffs that have been announced. ESPN laying off 300 people, mm-hmm. And there's some other corporations out there. Hewlett-Packard, I know, has been laying off a lot of people. So there's just there's some other things going on out there that layoffs, slowdowns, are just beginning to. That's why you have that dismal number you mentioned at the very beginning.
Yeah, and Rod and I were talking about how 70% of companies have beat earnings. Well, how do you beat earnings? You can lower expenses.
What's right. The
biggest expense? People. You get rid of people. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that you mentioned debt. Because debt is so cheap right now, a lot of companies have issued some debt to then turn around and buy back their stock.
Right.
So if I have less owners, and I, with the same money coming in, ownership of stock, same money coming in means higher earnings. So he says you really have to dig for the devil in the details on these earnings reports. And just because you had a company beat their earnings estimates, then it doesn't really mean that they're doing that well.
And we don't mean to sound scary to our listeners or anything like that, but if 70% have beat earnings, some of which have done it with
lower revenues,
30% have not. And that's an alarming number, too, that 30% are not beating earnings. And so, again, all of this kind of creates the things that we've talked about. Volatility has kind of spiked up this year. We've had, you know, a lot of people are if you look at the polls, they're very nervous about the economy. So there's this, you know, a little bit of little volatility on the horizon here, maybe.
And when you take a peek at companies and how their stock has performed after their earnings came out, it's more about what they're saying about the future than it is about the earnings. In fact, you could have come out and just absolutely smashed your earnings, but then gave cautionary remarks like Disney did and see your stock sell off. Or you come out and maybe not quite hit the earnings mark, but give a rosy forecast, then it goes up. So the home runs have been where you have beat your earnings and give a rosy forecast like Facebook. You know, it's over $300 billion. I saw, Doug, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the big companies in the S&P 500, Exxon, Chevron, J&J, GE, but now the biggest company by market capitalization in the S&P 500 is Apple. And I'm not sure in the S&P, but the, as far as just companies go, Apple. The second one was Alphabet, which is basically Google. And then third came along Exxon. And then you, I mean, then you have Facebook right up there. So when you look at the top companies, it's just flipped right on top of its head.
The rotation is happening. And even the energy sector, you know, we're not talking a lot about those anymore. Remember just 5 years ago, or certainly 8 years ago, this was a major topic of discussion, the major profits they're having, and all of the dark clouds that were over all of the energy companies. That's a complete reversal right now, even to the point where Chevron actually had some layoffs in the last couple of weeks. So it's just a huge rotation of who comes to the top, what's going on right now, what is being consumed, whether it's fuel for your car, whether it's electronics for your family. It all kind of moves in a rotation. We have to keep a very close eye on, though, what is the average consumer doing? I know we're going to talk about demographics tonight, David, which is always a very good topic. We'll get to that.
You know, we also have our eyes on the Fed. Janet Yellen came out and put December back on the table. I don't think the market reacted one way or the other to it. I'm thinking we're having a little Fed fatigue, as they've been saying. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know that they'll move in December, but if they do, they do. I'm not that worried about it. Short-term volatility probably to be expected, but we'll see. But global developments that might help or hurt us, you know, right now there hasn't been a whole lot of worries out there, and that's so funny how things things change. You know, China going to crash and burn, and, you know, it's going to take everyone else down. And all of a sudden, the Chinese stock market's had a nice little rebound, and we're not that worried about it anymore. So that's why you have to take such a long-term perspective of things. Don't get caught up in this 24-hour news and, you know, the reading of this and the gloom and doom of that. And come back, Doug, to a real purpose-driven portfolio, which if you've listened to us for any length of time, you know that it all boils down to invest with a purpose. Invest with the purpose of the money in mind, and then you'll be better. You'll be a better investor. Your expectations will be more in line. And at the end of the day, it just works out a heck of a lot better.
David, 5 months ago, I had boots on the ground in Athens, Greece.
Yes, you did.
1 week before, all of the ATMs could only spit out 60 euro. No matter how much money you had in the bank, you could only get 60 euro. Everything was coming to an end. It was all falling apart. It was horrible. And you know what? I'm not saying Greece is out of the woods. It's not even the news anymore. Remember, their leader resigned. Out. Done. Syrispus was his name. And he was talking about going to safer harbors around the world. And here we are, not even 6 months later. It's not even in the news. I think the thing I'm trying to get to is that when we talk about purpose-driven portfolios, it is so important that people step back and recognize what they're trying to accomplish. And most people, if you ask what the first thing you're trying to accomplish is, it's not beating an index.
No.
It's, I want an income stream. Or I want to participate in lower volatility than the markets provide. Or I want to be able to have a broad diversification or lower my volatility. It's not just beating an index. And we always say to people as we sit down and try to navigate the next 10, 20, 30 years, what do these look like? Knowing that even in our discussion the last couple minutes, we've talked in the last 10 years or 8 years about the energy companies being at the top. Now it's the electronic companies. China was about to go under. They've had a rally. Greece, just not even 6 months ago, was about to have this enormous collapse. We're not saying these things are not possible or out of the woods. It's just totally changed from 8 years to whether it's just 6 months. That's why it's so hard to predict exactly what the markets are going to do.
Yeah, just don't get so worked up. You know, as we wrote this book together, Doug, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, it really was meant to be a resource for people of the baby boom generation to get retirement ready. Mm-hmm. And I saw something the other day that made me think about how you relate retirement to other things that you've done in life for the very first time. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us only get a chance to retire just once. Now, you and I have really retired hundreds of times. Through the eyes of other yes. other people. But how many times have you gotten something right the very first time you did it? I'll give you the answer. The answer is never. I mean, whether it was riding the bike when you were 5 or 6 years old or playing golf, and I still don't have that one right, or learning to tango like I did back in the old Dancing with Celebrity days.
Yes.
The picture still hangs on the wall in the office as a painful reminder. But you didn't get it right. It took a lot of practice. And that's why I'm saying about retirement, too. The first time, you're going to get it wrong. Unless mm-hmm. you team up with the right people that have done it before. Doug, let's take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk demographics. You know, China,
yes.
who, speaking of China, for decades have had a one-baby policy. In fact, there's a disproportionate amount of males versus females over in China. And we've been saying for quite some time with our research that we've done with the Harry Dent Organization that China would have some problems down the road, because as their population age, who's going to fill in the gaps?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be the workers? Who's going to spend money and create economic activity? So we're going to talk a little bit about China. We'll then dovetail into Europe and how the migration of folks from the civil wars that we're seeing into Europe might actually underpin their big demographics problem, and then focus on the number one economy in the world, the United States of America, and how our demographics look, and just talk about how that relates to the economy and then ultimately relates into your investments. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the studio live with me. And, you know, Doug, China, it has migrated towards the second largest economy in the world, surpassing Japan a mm-hmm. few years ago. Still got a long ways to go before they catch the United States, and hopefully they don't. But if they do, it's going to take people. And the Chinese government for quite some time, like most big industrialized economies, has been trying to move them into a consumer-based economy. That's what Europe is. That's what Japan is. That's what the United States is. 70% of our economic growth comes from consumer spending. The rest comes from government expenditures and corporation expenditures. But 70% is from people, us spending money. That's what drives economic activity. It hasn't worked so far for China, so they're trying to reboot this thing. Mm-hmm. They've had a one-baby policy in China for decades. And what that means is they don't have a lot of young people now. So China has lifted the one baby policy, and now you can have two. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's about 30 years late. They also are trying to extend, and I don't know all the details on this, but they're raising the retirement age as well. So there is some kind of a defined retirement age in China. I don't know exactly what that is, but I did read that they've increased the retirement age, trying to keep people in the workforce so that people will have money and they'll spend it. But folks, here's how this really works. Most of the money that we spend isn't discretionary spending. It's not as that running out and, you know, spending on crazy stuff. It's more necessity spending. When do you have the highest necessity spending? It's when you have kids. You know, kids are expensive. You're never more broke than the day after you have your first child and then your second one, and you just continue to get more broke and broke. I had a good discussion just this morning with a gentleman that has two kids. One is 5 and one is 3, and he's a what we call wholesaler, kind of like a representative that comes and pitches their products to us that we might use for our clients. And he said, man, kids are expensive. And I said, just wait. Mm-hmm. They just continue to get more and more expensive. My son is going to be 15 years old in December. And he is expensive, and he's going to get more expensive next year whenever he gets his license and he starts driving. Yeah. He's involved in lots of activities, which are expensive. And then guess what? College. I mean, it's expensive. Well, if you have two kids and three kids, you have all this necessity spending. And we're not just talking about, you know, the events in the cars. We're talking about clothes and food and electricity. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience that my son and his friends that come over, they eat everything in sight, and every single light in the home is on. So I know for a fact that that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they leave, my necessity spending decreases significantly. And then it's just about me and my wife. We're not going to spend what we spend on electricity. We're not going to spend what we spend on food. We're not going to spend what we spend on going to Disney World. We're just not going to do it. Well, the Chinese people are no different. They're old. They don't have a lot of young people to spend money on, Doug. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the driving factors behind the Chinese economy not up to speed like they thought it would be.
You know, it's interesting, David, when we talk about demographics, and oftentimes we've talked about the baby boom, the echo boom, and all these different things. It really is a fascinating study to look at the waves and the ages. And to your point, the Chinese have had a very interesting, not only have they had a one-child policy, they've also had some very unique economic policies during a time when they haven't had a lot of children. And now they are beginning to perhaps double the size of children over the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. They see something coming. And it's interesting that's how they are trying to approach that. The other thing that's been going on in China, which is interesting, is all of the infrastructure, the buildings. They have 130 new airports in China. 130 new airports.
Do any airplanes fly in?
They are really, really ramping up and getting ready for a consumer class. And they are really expecting this new wave over the next 20 to 30 years to pay for all of these expenditures and growth that they've had.
And you take the same, mentality over to, Japan, or you take it into Europe, and I don't mean mentality, but the reality that they're aging as well. The Japanese population, they're about 10 years older on average than the United States. And we have 10,000 people a day turning 65 here in the United States. Well, again, you spend a lot of money when your kids are the youngest. So let's take a look at this, the baby boomers. And we're going to look at the United States right now. The peak of the baby boom generation were born somewhere around 1961. And you have to adjust for immigration in the United States because our doors still swing in here. They don't swing in China. They don't swing in Japan. And besides the Syrian refugees, they haven't really swung in Europe for the most part. But they swing in here. So immigration adjusted 1961. You flash forward to 2015. That means most of those folks are in their mid-50s. Well, if they had their first child around age 27, their second one around 29, that means their kids are growing up. I mean, they're in their mid-20s now, some in the late 20s. And this is the peak of the baby boomers. There's a bunch of them before that and a bunch of them after it, but that's the big peak of them. So here I am in the United States. I'm a 56, 57-year-old man. My wife and I, we just got our kids through college. They've gotten some jobs. And guess what? We're making great money. In your mid to late 50s, you're in your peak earnings years, but you're not in your peak spending years. That's what the difference is. Now it's all about us. It's about us spending money in the smart places. And where is that? Paying down debts. Well, that's not expansive to the economy. And it's also saving. I find, and Doug, you do too in practice, that when a person gets into their mid to late 50s and their kids are established and on their own, and they're off the payroll, hopefully, that we see one full paycheck in a two-income family, go into savings, whether it's 401k, savings, or whatever. People don't get that, but that's what happens. Well, that's not expansive. Yeah, granted, you have this echo boom, all these young people, and they'd love to spend money. They just don't have any, and they haven't started their families yet. But when they do, and this is 5, 6, 7 years away, when they start having families and they start having the necessity spending, the spending wave happens again, and we'll be just fine. That's why you see 1.5% GDP growth. And I think you're going to continue to see that. I just don't see any way around that unless we have some big influx of families from the Middle East. I don't have any idea, but practically that makes sense. And that's why I don't think interest rates are going to go wildly out of control. I don't think you're going to see any inflation. I think you're going to see slow, slothy growth for the next 4, 5, 6 years. That may go back to the comments that Bogle made from Vanguard, that stocks might only return 4% over the next 10 years.
Exactly. And David, remember, the one of the goals of the Fed chairwoman, is to keep confidence in line. She's made that very clear. She wants to keep confidence in line. So any dramatic moves in interest rates or anything, that's not going to keep confidence in line. So I think that she's going to continue to keep confidence in line.
Well, I don't know that she's done a very good job right now. She's kept confusion in line.
She's kept confusion to a certain degree, but she hasn't raised the rates like everyone anticipated. Right. And I think that's kind of the What I mean by that is she's probably going to continue to keep things very steady and slowly rise, well, but not drastic.
Yeah, they have too much loose. And, you know, when we talk about the stock market, we don't know whether it's going to return 4%, 10%, or 2%, or 0%, or go down. Mm-hmm. We don't think that there's a big bond bubble getting ready to bust, but still, practically, you're not going to make much in bonds. The interest rates aren't very high. So you have to look to alternative sources for returns, and we've been out there digging, and we found, you know, some to kind of feather in to sort of give it a little bit of a boost.
And we'll go back to what we have said and quoted on this program many times. The people who are going to do the best are the people who are just simply good savers. Because how do you make up for a lack of returns?
Save more.
You increase your savings.
We're going to take a break, Doug. When we come back, Social Security is changing. No question about it. Signed into law this week. It was passed as part of the budget agreement to avoid the debt ceiling disaster, which we've been feeling for the last several years. When we come back, we're going to talk about how it used to work, some of these claiming strategies that we've touted here on the program that we've educated the community about. And I've been telling folks for a long time, don't count on this to be around forever, but I certainly didn't expect it to change so quickly. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that and who still has a chance to take advantage of some of these terrific Social Security claiming strategies. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Doug, how long have we been talking these elaborate Social Security claiming strategies to maximize your benefits for now and into the future?
Yes. It's been a hot topic, hasn't
it? Oh, my goodness.
For quite some time.
We've done educational workshops at the library. I know other people in town have been jumping on board doing the same thing. There was even one class scheduled through Ivy Tech Lifelong Continuing Studies on these topics. And, Doug, it's coming to an end.
Abruptly to an end.
And, folks, typically when they make changes to something like Social Security, it doesn't even affect those that were even born yet. In the big reform back in 1986, the people that affected with increased retirement ages weren't even around. So we didn't really expect any major changes to come in these claiming strategies for people that were at least in their mid to upper 50s and certainly people not in their early 60s, but it has. What's changed? Well, we've, for a long time, have been using and utilizing some claiming strategies that really help people have huge guaranteed income streams from Social Security, inflation-adjusted, tax-advantaged in retirement, which would then allow them to preserve and protect their other assets and grow them reasonably without a lot of strain on the portfolio. This is how it worked. You're 66 years old. Let's say you're married. You would file for Social Security but not take it. That's called a suspend, file and suspend. When you do that, that allows someone else in your family to file on your record. Well, your wife is, let's say, 62. She then could file on your record. It doesn't affect what you're going to get or will get in the future, but she would receive 50% of your full retirement benefit minus an early age reduction, and then she could delay her benefit as well. Why would you delay? I'm sorry. Then you would delay your benefit all the way up to age 70. Then you take it. Why do you delay? Well, for every year you wait past full retirement age, and this part hasn't changed, you'll receive an 8% increase. So you get 8% more than 16, 24, then 32% more, and plus inflation increases. Pretty darn good deal. All the while your wife is collecting 50%. The other way works too. Your wife is 62. She files for her benefit. It's a reduced benefit, sure, but she still gets it. You're 66. You do what's called a restricted application. You file, but restrict to her benefit only. Doesn't affect what she gets, but you receive 50% of her full benefit, and then at age 70, you flip over and take your own. That was the most commonly used strategy. Mm-hmm. It's all coming to an end.
Coming to an end. And David, didn't make the news. If we weren't talking about it, the average person didn't even know this just occurred.
And here's the thing. It got signed into law this week. It was part of the budget agreement to avoid the debt ceiling disaster, which we felt the last few years. You will have exactly 6 months. So up until like May 1st, to do a suspended application, but you have to be 66, either now or before May 1st to do it. If you're not 62, Doug, before the end of this year, I mean, we're talking December 31st, or technically the way they look at it, January 1st, you will not be able to file a restricted application on a suspended benefit. So there are just a handful of people that can still really take advantage of this. And in our weekly commentary that we sent out, our biweekly commentary, it was all about this Social Security claiming and who still can take advantage of these opportunities and who can't. If you're already doing it, so like if you've already filed suspended and you're already on benefits, you're fine. There is not going to be any changes to the people that are already doing it. But if you are going to be 66 or you're 66 now or older or will be 66 by the time May 1st rolls around, you have to contact us and let us help you dictate this thing or navigate this thing. It's very, very important that you take advantage of this because I can tell you from my conversations with Congressman Young, who sits on the Ways and Means Committee, and we've had conversations, and he would ask me questions like this. What are you guys doing in regular everyday meetings? Well, Social Security has come up more than once. And I said, you know, it kind of is ridiculous that they allow you to do this. In fact, when we do the programs, people say, well, this is why it's going broke. Well, it's just one of the reasons it's going broke. But the divorcees, the widow's benefits, that hasn't really changed. Divorcees has changed. So, you know, it's just one of those things that we probably knew it was going to come at some point. We just didn't know it was going to come this fast, Doug.
That's right. And again, it was completely off the radar unless you were reading the details of the debt ceiling, but here it is. And what an opportunity for people to have been, for those people who've just kind of been delaying, do I need to see a financial advisor? Do I need to do some income planning? I'll wait just till 62 and then I'll do this because we've talked about waiting, you know, 62. Mm-hmm. It's really a great opportunity for those people listening who have not set the appointment, sat down with a financial expert, and said, how do I do income planning, and what does this change mean? It's a real clarion call, and it's a great time to do that.
So if you need a little help, do not feel bad. Reach out to us. Email us. That's the best way. CFCI.us, and contact us through the website. And just say you want to talk to someone about Social Security and how it might affect you or how you might be able to benefit from it. So again, if you are someone that is 66 years old or married to someone who's 66 years old, either now or older or will be before May 1st, very, very important. Very important you talk to somebody because you are the last of the dogs that are going to be able to do this thing. So definitely reach out to us. Doug, let's take another break. When we come back, let's get into some questions of the week. Had a good one here. Had a lot of good ones, actually even some carryovers from last week. But one was, will the qualified charitable distributions be available for my IRA distributions for 2015? We'll talk about that. When do I have to take my first required distribution from a retirement account? And also, where do I put my money? That's always a good question. I have a limited amount of money. Do I put more into the college plan, or do I put more into my 401k? We'll answer that and more. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's the Question of the Week segment, my favorite of the show. I love this section. Doug, have you been over to the new Furniture Exchange?
I have driven by it, but they were closed when I went by. Flat Steve, you guys were closed, but it was late at night. So I need to get over. But I've heard good things.
Oh, my goodness.
I have heard terrific things. So I assume you've been there.
Oh, yeah. We went over there for a little private open house and
well, see, I didn't
viewed
Flat
it.
Steve, I didn't get the invite to I don't know. This has gone downhill very quickly.
So, yeah, but you know, you need to stop in there. It's absolutely fantastic. It's remarkable. I mean, you should see there's furniture everywhere. There's a big used section in the back, or previously owned is what I think you're supposed to refer to it as. But anyway, it's really good. All right, Doug, we have some questions of the week. This week brought to you by Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home. Get help from a Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. It's over on 17th Street. It's newly remodeled with 24-hour on-site management offering pickup and truck rentals. So, Doug, we have no excuses. Call about their fall special at 812-339-4221. And to answer your question, folks, no, I have not yet stored my stuff like I promised on the commercials, but I'm going to. We had a big party for my son and the Sounds of South kids after the Beauty and the Beast last Saturday night, so I didn't want to get rid of all my junk yet. So I think next weekend when I'm back from our conference that we'll be attending, we're going to load it up and take it to the storage.
Take it to storage.
So store your stuff over to Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. All right, Doug, here we go. Questions of the week. Here we go. We got one where pretty much this one comes around a lot. Where do I put my money? I want to make sure that I max out my 401k for 2015, but I also want to make sure I put my money in the 529 plan and get the tax credit, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to do both. What would you suggest? I already have put $14,000 in my 401k so far this year. Dougie?
Well, the good news for the questioner is that if they are under the age of 50, that $17,000 mm-hmm. is the contribution limit for 2015. So they're actually pretty close. But the 529 plan does offer a 20% cash back on the state return up to $5,000, which is $1,000 cold hard cash. I mean,
hard
so.
To beat.
You know, if this was phrased differently, like I've putting in $1,000 in my 401k and I have $5,000, that might be a different story. But listen, they're very close to the max, and I think that they can make that contribution, the 529, and get the whole.
There you go, and it has to be made before December 31st of 2013. So, Doug?
Absolutely. Okay, here's the next question. This one, David, is a good one. Should I be putting money into my HSA each year? I haven't been using it, but if there was a good reason to add to it, I will. This is kind of someone sounds like they have an account just kind of sitting out here. What's the advantage?
Well, it's a health savings account, and not everyone has them. You have to have a high deductible plan to have one, and you'll know it if you have one. But 2015 offers individuals, families, a lot of opportunities to save for current, but really also for future health care expenses. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to fund the HSA, but don't necessarily use it right now. Store it up for later, because it's proven, not proven, but the studies show from Fidelity that a retired couple over 65 are going to spend $250,000 on out-of-pocket health insurance premiums and things that aren't covered. So you can always save it for later. It's 100% deductible from your gross income. Now, there's some limits on what you can put in. It's $3,350 this year for individuals, $6,650 for a family. So, yes, absolutely. If you have the money, put it in. It's a great place to store it up for later. And you can use it now if you want for those, you know, deductibles and things like that. But, like I said, let it grow. It'll grow tax-free if used for qualified medical expenses later on. I love the HSA.
Getting a lot of press in the news, these HSAs are getting a lot of new press in the news.
All right, Doug, let's see. We have one here.
An advisor asked this question.
Well, we get a lot of those.
I grew up believing, I'm sorry.
The question is, I have money to invest.
Not knowing where to put the money when the time was right. And so here, so I have money to invest. I messed that up. If I have money to invest, what do I do right now?
Yeah,
where do I go?
You know, Rod and I had that discussion just today on looking at the S&P 500 at 2080. Got support there. You know, the market's above all the moving averages, the 50, 65, 200-day moving average. You know, I don't know that I would jump in with both feet right now, but I grew up believing that the best time to invest is now, or maybe a better way to say it is, when do you invest? It's when you have the money. I mean, that's what we grew up believing. But saying that, if I had a large lump sum of money, not just a small amount, but a lump sum like a pension or maybe an inheritance, or maybe I just sold a piece of real estate and had a lump sum of money, I would put a portion of it to work right now, but then average the rest of it in over the next 3 months, 6 months, maybe even 9 months. We call that dollar cost averaging. In fact, just today, Doug, I had a situation where an account transferred in. There was about $150,000 that needed allocated to equities. We put 50% to work today. We put the other half into a dollar cost averaging account. It was actually with an insurance company that offered a 6% DCA account. So we did that. So it's earning something while it's moving slowly into the market. I just felt more comfortable doing it that way. You know, if it's a small amount, it's a good fund, a good investment, put it in there, it'll probably be okay, because it's so hard to time that stuff.
And David, let me go back to what we said earlier in the program. We were talking about purpose-driven investing.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a lump sum of money you're trying to make a decision with right now, in relation to this question, where do I invest with all these things, this is a good time, again, to go back to the advisor and say, let's write out what the purpose of the money is, not just are the markets up or down. It's a great time to do look at purpose-driven investing.
Now, another question on qualified charitable distributions. That's a term that's been around for quite some time now. What that means, if you're over the age of 70 and a half, you can take money directly from your IRA to a charity. It has to be paid directly to the charity. It not be included in your taxable income. It also satisfies your minimum distribution. Last year, it was not law until January of 2015, but they made it retroactive. I talked to Congressman Young about this, and they called them extenders. Well, it did not get renewed yet for 2016, but they'll be 2015. They'll be voting again in 2016 for these extenders. It's likely to be voted on in a positive way and be retroactive for 2015. So, what do you do? Go ahead, if you're charitably inclined, give the money directly from your IRA, and then wait and see. The worst thing that could happen is that it doesn't pass, and then you take a tax deduction for it if it's a large enough contribution. So I'm under the belief that it will happen. So if you are planning to give money to a charity and you want to give it from your IRA, you can do it. All right, Doug, here's one for you. When do I have to take my first required minimum distribution?
In the year that you turn, David.
70 and a half.
70 and a half.
Yeah. I don't know why we do this to people. All of a sudden, you know, you're 1.5. He's 3.5 years old. He's 4.5. Mm-hmm. Then eventually you don't say halves anymore. But then all of a sudden when you get to retirement age, halves start coming back into play again. 59 and a half, 70 and a half. But yeah. When you turn 70 and a half, you have to take a minimum distribution from your retirement accounts. If you don't take it, whatever you don't take and you're supposed to take, it's a 50% penalty. That's 50%. It's a big deal. So if you were to take, supposed to have taken 10 grand out, let's say, and you didn't, the penalty is $5,000. Now, your first year, you can actually delay that until April 1st of the year following 70 and a half, and there's reasons for that. But then you would have to take two the next year. So the real answer is April 1st, year following 70 and a half. But for most people, it's the year you turn 70 and a half. Take it out.
Absolutely. And David, you know, you wouldn't believe how many people have that question. It's a constantly asked question. When do I take RMDs? A lot of people don't know what they mean. They don't know where it comes from. They get these statements from their IRA accounts and say, you must take this. It's a great question, and it's something that we're going to have to probably continually talk about down through the years.
Over and over and over. Yeah. That's why we're going to continue to do this. When I talked to Mary Beth Franklin, who writes on Social Security topics, she said, I can write on this for the next 10 years. She's going to have to change what she's writing on now to something else.
Yes, she is.
But with 10,000 people a day turning 65, it's not relevant to everyone. They don't listen until it becomes their time. Hey, let's take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Just a couple minutes left in the show. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock is the replay. And then, again, next week we'll be playing the show again as we're out of the conference. But if you're hearing it that week, and I said that, we'll actually be back the following week. The week before Thanksgiving, we'll be back live in the studio. Doug Hughes has been with me the entire program, the co-author of the new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, the resource for adults ages 50 and older. A lot of terrific reviews from individuals who have walked up to me and said, hey, I've really enjoyed your book. I've enjoyed not only the easy read, but the stories and how it really applies to me. You can go to Amazon and put your review in. There was one funny review that someone said, boring, dry as something. But if you put enough good reviews on top of that, it sort of waters that one down. So once again, go there, write your review, make it a good one, not a bad one. And if it's not a good one, it's not today's guide to retirement planning. It's like tomorrow's or yesterday's guide to retirement planning. So Doug Hughes, thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Of course.
And again, next week we'll be out of pocket, but we'll be back live again the following week to offer up hopefully the gift giving show, which is always one of the crowd favorites. So have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you then. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.